Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. It's the Conference USA Report Podcast. We have a little bit of a different show for you today. I know that usually, you know, I get on here and I talk about what happened in the week and just kind of recap the week. Well, you know what happened in the week, right? We can touch on some of those things now, but we're going to spend the bulk, and I do mean the bulk of this program, talking with three different beat writers that cover UTSA, Western Kentucky, and Old Dominion. And, you know, we'll introduce those folks in just a little bit. The idea is, like, you know, this is the end of the season, and it's time to start taking stock, right? It's not quite spring cleaning, but everybody's fixing to figure out what they want to do, right? UTSA has not been mentioned in a whole lot of coaching carousel kind of things, but definitely Mike Sanford. There was a big report this week by Brad Stevens. That's why I decided to call him up, and then we'll talk to him about Mike Sanford just basically having a number he has to reach. He has a magic number, so that's definitely newsworthy. Coming into the season, you know, Brad Lambert at Charlotte was on the hot seat, the hottest seat. Maybe a little bit Mike Sanford. And, you know, if things got crazy, maybe Bobby Wilder. We've talked about Bobby Wilder this season on the show. That crazy win against North Texas may have saved his job. Let's quickly recap the scores this week. Marshall won 30-13 in a game that was a little bit closer for a while. Charlotte continues to play well and impress while also not getting as many wins as you'd like. I know some Charlotte fans are saying, hey, you need to give us a little bit more credit than you have been giving us. And, you know, I was wrong about Charlotte. I thought they were going to be very bad. Instead, they've just been, you know, mediocre, middle of the pack. And that's not a knock because that's an improvement, you know. Not everybody can be great. But they've continued to impress. I don't know how much of this is sustainable. I don't know where they go forward from here. I don't know if what they've shown so far has indicated that Brad Lambert is the guy long term, right? But overall, Marshall impressed. You know, 30-13 winners. Isaiah Green out there throwing touchdown passes. When in doubt, throw it to Tyree Brady. Not the greatest offensive performance, but it got the job done, right? Middle Tennessee, 48-32. You don't like that 32, even though a lot of it came late, right? Middle Tennessee still kind of, sort of, can not quite control their fate, but they can make some things happen. They get a win against UAB, and Marshall takes care of FIU. You know, hey, Middle Tennessee is hosting the conference championship game in Murfreesboro, right? That's ideal. Again, you know, Brent Stock still, when he's out there and he's playing well, he's right up there with the best in this conference. And as he goes, so does Middle Tennessee. So do the Blue Raiders. A big win there, taking care of business. That's a little bit tougher than I think anybody realizes, traveling out to El Paso. It's, you know, halfway across the country. El Paso is closer to the Pacific Ocean than it is to Houston, Texas, right? Just FYI for everybody. Obviously, big game, big comeback. 34-31, Old Dominion over North Texas. North Texas led this game 28-0 with 2 minutes and 50 seconds left in the game. In the quarter, I'm sorry. Second quarter and a half. Jeez, I'm misspeaking over here. And Old Dominion not quite stormed back, but they proceeded to, you know, make a comeback. They got a few stops in there. There was a North Texas fumble. There was a Mason Fine interception, only his second on the season. 300 attempts between interceptions for him. And, you know, Travis Fulgham, Jonathan Duhart impressed. There was controversy where Kyrie Muhammad was accused of spitting on Jonathan Duhart. He later said, no, I didn't do that, man. But, you know, facts are facts. He got ejected for spitting. Changed the game a little bit, but I wouldn't say that gave the game to Old Dominion. Clutch drive, converted 2 fourth downs on the final drive, got the touchdown, and all but won the game, right? North Texas' vaunted defense allowed a 14 play 71-yard drive to lose it, right? Western Kentucky lost 34-15 to FAU in a game where FAU kind of looked like the old FAU. Yeah, it was like 10-9 at a certain point in time. But I don't know if you remember a lot about last season when FAU would kind of battle for a little bit and then just proceed to turn it on. And just all of a sudden, just like an onslaught. And you're like, wow, 40-yard run, touchdown run. We got a three and out. Wow, 50-yard touchdown run. Wow, we're just getting slaughtered now all of a sudden. It had the cumulative pace has an effect. And I think we're seeing FAU look a little bit like their old selves again. And some of that has to do with the improved quarterback play, right? Roberson's playing a little bit better, and they're sneaking in DeAndre Johnson there. FIU, 45-7 winners over UTSA. UTSA looks bad. Nobody went to the game. I think it was the lowest attended game in quite some time. It might have been all time. Couple this with the fact that UIW, a San Antonio-based college that's going to play. It's FCS school, whose head coach is Eric Morris, former Texas Tech great, former Texas Tech receiver, and also former Texas Tech wide receiver. I mean, offensive coordinator, sorry. He clinched a share of the Southland Conference title with a win. I think they beat Central Arkansas that day. Just kind of a contrast. And he said, you know, he caused some controversy in the city when he's like, hey, San Antonio really needs a college football program to be proud of right now, right? These two teams square off next season. I don't think it's going to be so amazing just because I know UIW is losing like their two receivers that he said could probably play at Tech if they were being recruited right now, and also the running back who's just like a threat to score from any place on the field. And I think he scored against New Mexico. He scored against North Texas from like 90 yards out or something like that. The guy's good. He has like 12 touchdowns on the season, over 1,000 yards rushing. So they're going to be gone. But, you know, that offense is explosive. He has a freshman quarterback out there, you know, calling the shots. So interesting for UTSA. And we're going to talk to JJ Bettis of Inside Runner Sports to get an idea of what's going on with UTSA. We're going to do that in just a second. Louisiana Tech, 28-13 winners. Taking care of business, you know? I feel like teams are blowing out Rice, and all Louisiana Tech can muster is a 28-13 win, which is very Louisiana Tech this season, right? They're good enough to beat a lot of teams, and they only have the one conference loss, but they haven't really impressed all season. I came in like on the bandwagon, and now the season's ending, and I'm a skeptic. As it is, you know, they only had the one conference loss to the division champ, so that's not bad all told. There's another game coming up. Got at Southern Miss. It's, you know, big game, little rivalry there. But I mean, as it stands, you like Louisiana Tech, what they've done so far, but he felt like it could have been a little bit better, right? There is room to improve, definitely. Finally, UAB 26, Southern Miss 23 in overtime. Southern Miss gave him a game. That 23 points, I think, is the most a conference opponent has given him, right? North Texas only gave him 21. Granted, this was in overtime. Nobody saw this game because BN Sports broadcast went out. But that was due to the internet and Legion Field going out. I think both radio broadcasts went down. The BN Sports guys had to, like, call over the phone. It was funny because you could hear the phone beeping, like, beep, beep, beep. It's kind of sad because we didn't get to see Spencer Brown score the winning touchdown to seal it, to clinch the West Division title. UAB is all but assured of hosting this thing if they can beat Middle Tennessee, right? They go on the road to play Texas A&M, which is a big game. You know, like, UAB's beat everybody in Texas so far this season, right? Beat UTEP, beat Rice, beat North Texas, beat UTSA. Why not add TAMU, right? Texas A&M, in College Station? I will be rooting for UAB just for conference supremacy, you know? That would be awesome. UAB clinches the division, you know. A little weird game against an SEC school right now, but then they close it out against Middle Tennessee in what could be a preview of the conference title game. Basically, if UAB wins this game, It's pretty much all but assured that FIU will be the opponent, and then the game would be in Birmingham, right? If UAB loses that game, then they probably, you know, they might, could, they very well could play at Murfreesboro. And it might play in Miami if FIU beats Marshall and, you know, like the tiebreakers swing in their favor. I think right now UAB has enough to beat Middle Tennessee. And we'll see that game in Birmingham, but that's just me right now, right? Anything can happen. I think Tyler Johnson's going to be playing this week at Texas A&M, so we'll see what happens. He threw a 3 touchdown pass against UTSA, but then he threw 3 interceptions against Southern Miss, right? Next week, Thursday game, FAU at North Texas. This was going to be a marquee game. Now it just look at these guys. What went wrong, ladies and gentlemen? I don't know how many people are going to attend that game. It's a Thursday. It's cold. 8:30 p.m. Yeah, it's on CBS Sports Network, but it's cold. Saturday games, Middle Tennessee at Kentucky. There's a little SEC game. FIU at Charlotte. You know, FIU, I feel like they're going to take care of business, but you got to look out for Charlotte. Like we just said, that, you know, they run the ball. Benny LeMay can run the ball. The defense is good. They like to get takeaways. VMI at Old Dominion. That should be a win for Old Dominion. And we're going to talk to Ed Miller, the Virginian Pilot, a little bit later, and he's going to talk to us about Old Dominion, that win, where Bobby Wilder stands, and other things. Louisiana Tech at Southern Miss, as I mentioned. I'm looking at Louisiana Tech to win this game, but Southern Miss is always difficult in Hattiesburg. UTSA at Marshall. Last season, this game was like anti-offense, right? It was like 6-0 or something like that. I think the final score was like 6-3, something ridiculous. Marshall has a good defense, and they have, you know, offense. UTSA has been pretty terrible on offense, like historically terrible, and also their defense is looking a little weaker every day. They play better at home. They're not going to be at home. So I think Marshall can basically pick their score. UAB travels to Texas A&M. That's going to be an ESPN2. So get your watch parties ready. UTEP at Western Kentucky. That's going to be in sport. I can't imagine a whole lot of people are going to watch that game. And we're going to talk to Brad Stevens, as I mentioned, of the Bowling Green Daily News. He's going to tell us about Mike Sanford's weird magic number. What happens if he splits these games? And a little bit more about Western Kentucky and what's went wrong this season. Finally, Rice is going to take on LSU on ESPNU. You can't really see Rice doing too much in that one. Hopefully, they avail themselves well and you know, make the conference look okay. But I really can't see too much success coming in that game. Now that that's done, right? Let's call up JJ. JJ Bett is of the Inside Runner Sports, and he's going to tell us about UTSA. Let's call him up. All right, JJ, so obviously not the best season for UTSA this year, right? How much of a hot seat is Frank Wilson on?
That is the question surrounding UTSA football these last 2 weeks of the 2018 regular season. And I don't think anybody really knows, to be honest with you. Coach Wilson has a huge buyout in his contract. Some of that was because UTSA was afraid he eventually leave the school, and so they'd have some kind of remedy to if that ever happened. But UTSA has a new administration, a new president, a new athletic director. They did not hire Frank Wilson, so I think they're going to give him a little bit of leeway. I don't think his seat is very hot, to be honest with you. I just, that's me reading between the lines. Nobody's kind of said anything either way. I asked Coach Wilson about that earlier this week, and he said he has the support of the administration from every conversation he's had. The interaction that I've witnessed between the administration and him seemed to support that, and I don't think he's going anywhere.
Do you think some of that is, you know, because I read what Jerry Briggs, his post on InsideRunnerSports.com. He was saying that, you know, like Frank Wilson's talking about the injuries, and I know that's been a large part of the reason. I mean, how much of that is him just kind of leaning on that? I don't want to say making excuses, but, I mean, normally you hear coaches, you know, somebody gets injured, they're like, well, you know, we can't worry about that. We got to just next man up, that kind of thing. I mean, what's the feeling there?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a narrative we're seeing late in the season. I don't know that I mean, nobody likes to hear use that as an excuse, but it really is a reality for this football team. I mean, I think they've had 28 first time appearances this season, 23 freshmen or something to play, some wild crazy number. I mean, it's a real young team, and part of it is the injuries. I think they were kind of, you know, weary about bringing that up until they were eliminated from postseason play. But now that, you know, the season's basically over and, you know, they're just fighting to for each other, it's true that they are down a few guys. I knew there were about a dozen guys kind of who weren't going to play this past week, and that doesn't even include the handful of guys who were out for the season. So it's tough, but I don't think that's much of the reason for the struggles this year as much as it's just a really young team. There aren't a lot of juniors and seniors and, you know, key positions, and that goes back to, you know, the last few recruiting classes, and some of it didn't have to do anything with Wilson. It was the staff before, so it's a tough position to be in, to be honest with you.
So I think that, you know, the Frank Wilson's been a bit unlucky, you know, like you said, with these injuries, and this was always going to be a rebuilding year. You know, you lose Marcus Davenport last year, Dalton Sturm, and a lot of the guys that were part of some of the better UTSA teams, right? So I think he's just kind of unlucky there. But I also think that some of the criticism of him has to do with how he sort of underperformed relative to the team he had. I mean, Dalton Sturm, he was on an NFL roster for a brief time. Marcus Davenport, obviously a first-rounder, right, an impact player. And, I mean, you don't really compete for a conference championship there. How much of that is just – I mean, how much has Frank Wilson underperformed in your mind, if at all?
I actually think the jury's still out. A lot of people forget that UTSA is a startup program. You look at the true startup programs the last 10, 12 years, and nobody goes to a conference championship game. Nobody even competes for a conference championship. UAB is the one, you know, exception to that rule, and that's because they shut down the program and now they have all these, you know, graduate transfers and six-year players and whatnot. But it is hard to compete because I mean, there's financial issues, there's facility issues, you're looking at staff turnover. It's not all of that stuff has direct impact on the quality of the football field, the play, the product on the football field. And I think people just say, oh, you know, you were bowl eligible year one, you were bowl eligible in year two, and now year three, it's not going well. Well, I mean, there's all these other things outside of the playing field that contribute to that. So it's a down year. I think they probably thought they'd be a little bit better this year, but, you know, just the offensive struggles have just been too much to bear. And if you want to point at one thing that's, you know, underproduction, I mean, it's that offense. It's that there's absolutely no running game. There's the quarterback seems like an unresolved position, and those are fair areas of criticism. Just the overall record, I don't know if I'd expect anything beyond what we're seeing. Even if things were as good as they would have wanted headed into the season, so.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, and then, you know, adding to that, they lost Frank Harris, right? You know, and so they kind of had to figure out the quarterback situation like right before the season started, which is never good. So I saw one thing this week, and it was like whether Josiah Tuaefa was going to, you know, declare for the draft or what. I mean, personally, I don't really see the upside in coming back. I mean, you know, like, aside from, yeah, you know, trying to lead his team to, you know, win a bowl game, but I can't really see UTSA competing for a conference title next year. And I feel like the upside is too great to go to the NFL. But what have you heard about his leanings?
Well, I haven't heard much, to be honest with you. That's why I actually asked him about it. And mm-hmm. I think I caught him kind of off guard. There's a video I put out there, and I don't think he's thought about it much, to be honest with you. He's a very spiritual person. He's quiet. He's reserved. He recently got engaged, I think this past off season. So he's not a real out there guy that, you know, kind of shares a lot of his personal feelings with everybody. But he's talented, and he had a bad season last year where he was banged up with injuries, and you know, this has kind of been a renaissance back to his freshman All-American year, and he's a Butkus Award semifinalist, you know, one of 10 guys in the nation to be a semifinalist, and the only group of five guy on that list. I mean, yeah. There's national champions on that list, and he's one of those guys, and I think that's very deserving. So if he gets the opportunity, I wouldn't be surprised if he left, because that's such a tremendous opportunity. But I don't know. I mean, his stats have been good this season. They haven't really been out of this world. And I mean, it's one of those things. He's a team guy. He's a road runner through and through. So I think it's going to be a tough decision for him.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point, and I'm glad you brought it up to him. But yeah, I mean, like, I feel like there's no other way to raise his stock anymore. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how many more tackles is he going to make that's going to make a guy, an NFL scout, go, okay, now he's ready? I mean, you know, he's tackled everybody. He's on the award list. Everybody thinks he's good. He has pretty much universal praise from all the coaching staffs across the league, so... Yeah, I don't really see the upside to staying, although, you know, you only get to play college football the one time, right? So maybe that's it.
Yeah.
That's all he needs.
I mean, and the thing is with the NFL, they look for a certain type of player, the size, the speed, and I don't know if he necessarily fits the NFL mold, but if you're good enough, they're going to find you. So it's going to be a very interesting offseason to monitor what he does. So, I mean, your guess is as good as mine. Nobody really knows, I don't think.
So, who's starting at quarterback this week? And what do you think we should expect? I mean, the offense has been trending downward. Do you see, like, a bounce back, you know, anytime soon? I saw Bryce Rivers do a touchdown pass in his first collegiate pass to get the runners off of being shut out against FIU. Who's going to be the starting quarterback this week in West Virginia?
I think we're going to see Jordan Weeks, the true freshman out of Wimberley, start. He's played three games, and he did not start this past week. And I think some of that has to do with the offensive line struggles. They wanted to have a more mobile quarterback. They wanted to do more design runs. And Jordan Weeks and Bryce Rivers, to that point, those guys aren't very mobile quarterbacks. But I think that's where you could trace a lot of the struggles with the offense to the play of the offensive line. And obviously having young quarterbacks who can't, you know, pick up all the blitz reads or make all the correct calls on the blocking, you know, protections, mm-hmm. that doesn't help either. But I think we're going to see both of them. They're still trying to win. Coach Wilson said something that the other day that red shirts don't matter. I know they would like to want to redshirt Jordan Weeks. So if he could only play in one of the next two games, I think that'd be advantageous. And, you know, give Bryce Rivers a shot. He's kind of been the odd man out this entire season through the quarterback carousel. And now they got a couple of guys injured, and it's the end of the season. And, I mean, he doesn't lose anything with his redshirt playing these last few games. So why not? Why not see if they could get it going? But the biggest thing to me is whoever's at quarterback, they need to somehow get a run game going. There's been no run game whatsoever, and that is the biggest story of this season.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's kind of crazy. So is it all offensive line play? How much of this is the new coordinator, Al Borges, there? I mean, it seemed odd to me that, you know, Frank Wilson was talking about paring back the offense and making it a lot more simpler. It's definitely not something you want to hear, you know, talked about. I think it was in October when he was mentioning that. Seems a bit late, right?
I think it's a little bit of everything. I mean, it's you got a new offensive coordinator working with a new offensive line coach, and then you have wide receivers coach in a new passing game coordinator title, doing more with the offense. And none of those guys have kind of worked together in that kind of element before. So there was a learning curve with that. I mean, you could see it in the beginning of the season. They looked a little bit unorganized, just, you know, how they got the plays in and having to call timeouts and stuff. But, but some of it is just, you know, bad blocking, you know, guys missing assignments or not being on the same page. And it was evident. I think there was a dust up on the offensive line with the offensive line on the sidelines this last game because, you know, they weren't communicating with each other. And I that's the tough part about it, because you try to want to fix it, but, you know, you got three freshmen starting, a starter from a year ago injured, one of the JUCO guys out for the season. So there just hasn't been any continuity on the O-line, and it really has shown.
All right, so last question for you, because I know you got to go. Frank Wilson came in known as a recruiter, and, you know, he had some decent classes there, and I think everybody kind of expected, maybe this is some of the pressure on him, right? Everybody kind of expected him to you know, show some of that talent out there and just kind of win with some of it. How has this downturn affected recruiting at all?
It's been a slow recruiting year this cycle, but, you know, historically it doesn't really affect recruiting that much. I mean, because the sales pitches come in and help us turn this thing around. Like, yeah, we can offer you early playing time. The hard part about it is we're barely starting to see some of his recruits hit the field. And I mean, it takes 2 or 3 years to get your guys in, and the timing of when Wilson was first brought in, I think 2 weeks before signing day in 2016, he didn't have a coaching staff. He kept all the commits that were under the previous staff. He threw together, you know, I was looking at today, 7 guys, and those guys are barely seeing the field. And it's almost like that first cycle it wasn't even a full class. It wasn't even a full, you know, opportunity for them to get, you know, talent on the field. And even at that, these are 3-star guys, you know, maybe a low 4-star guy here and there. They're not ready right out of high school to come in. They have to redshirt. They have to try and do it. But UTSA isn't doing that. I mean, they got a true freshman quarterback that's probably going to start today or this week, a true freshman running back that's probably going to start because there's only 2 healthy running backs. You know, youth all over the place, and that's just the hand they're dealt with. And I think it's going to take an extra year before we see some of that talent, you know, really start to excel on the football field.
Well, that might be why everybody is remaining patient, and that's a little bit different in modern college football. Hey, JJ, appreciate you coming on the show. Hope to have you again soon. You know, appreciate it. Thanks, man.
Anytime.
Thanks again to JJ Bettis of Inside Runner Sports. Check out his work there. He tweets about UTSA. He goes to all the games. He's at the basketball games. You know, read his work. He and Jerry Briggs, I think, are doing a lot of the work there, covering UTSA there. All right, let's move on, and let's talk about another guy on the hot seat. This is an actual hot seat, right? The other ones are kind of speculative. Like, are they going to fire him? Should they fire him? Do they have enough money? Let's talk about a guy who is definitely on the hot seat, who has a magic number. I don't know if you guys have ever played Football Manager, but I like that game. And occasionally when you're about to get fired, the management will come up to you and say, you got to get 6 points in the next 5 games or else you're out on your feet, buddy. This reminds me of that, and it would be hilarious if it didn't involve somebody's job, right? Let's talk to Brad Stevens of the Bowling Green Daily News and see what's going on in Bowling Green. All right, Brad, so obviously a tough season in Bowling Green, and you know, you had the story come out this week. There's kind of a wins goal, right? Sweep the season, everything's fine with Mike Sanford. Lose them both, lose your job. That's pretty simple, and, you know, I guess that if you wanted a goal, that's a good one to have, I guess. But kind of some weirdness in there. Like, what happens if you lose one and you win one, right? Can you take us through that a little bit?
Yeah, no, it's definitely a curious situation. So you know, Mike Sanford is in his second year as head coach. They've lost 14-16 and lost six straight. And he's 1-9 for the season. They have two games left. They host UTEP on Saturday, and they go to Louisiana Tech on November 24th. And based on everything I've heard and what I've reported, is that, you know, if he loses these two games, he's more than likely going to be fired. If he wins these two games, more than likely going to come back as head coach. And then if they split, I'm not really sure what will happen. So there's obviously a lot of decisions that probably need to be made.
That seems really odd to me. I mean, like, if you can win these two games, what's so special about these two games? I mean, what are we going to learn in two games that we haven't learned in the previous, you know, two seasons? How much of that, and I saw, Pat 40, kind of when he linked to it, he was kind of saying, maybe they're just kind of getting feelers out. How much of that feeling do you get?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure what people's motivations might be. I mean, I know that – I think the thing they've wanted to see is progress.
Yeah.
And I think for a while there was – even, you know, if they were losing games, there was a look of progress going on. I mean, you know, they lost, you know, 3 out of 4 losses to start conference season around about 3 points. And so you looked at those and said, you know, maybe if you get one break here or there, things turn out differently. You know, obviously, in the last few weeks, they've lost each of those games by, you know, double digits and haven't really been in any of those games in the fourth quarter. So, you know, if they were to turn around, and I mean, obviously UTEP is not a, you know, not a team in the top conference USA, but if they were to turn around, get a nice win versus them, and then, you know, finish the season upsetting Louisiana Tech, then all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, kind of a young roster that finished the season strong with a couple of wins, and you had a little bit of something to build off of. But I will say, and the people I've talked to, that if they do bring him back, it kind of is coming with the expectation that next season turn out differently. I think that, you know, if Mike Sanford does come back for a third year, the expectation is that they go to a bowl game and they compete for a conference title. I don't think that he could survive another season like this if he does come back next year.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, I think everybody had high expectations for Western Kentucky after, you know, back-to-back championship seasons. Even though there was some roster turnover, you know, Mike White was there. I was going to say the linebacker's name, and I'm going to give up. But yeah.
Joel E.A. Booneyway?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I knew you'd be able to nail it first time.
I haven't said in a few months. A little bit rusty, but yeah.
Yeah, I was going to do it.
Always put on Iggy right here.
I was excited to do it. I was like, I'm going to get it right. You know, like they had a decent enough team, and you know, I think everybody would have forgiven Sanford and West Kentucky if they, you know, fell short of conference championship game. But they didn't impress. I think Mike White was sacked like 45 times or something like that, which was like worst in the league. And you know, Sanford came in with something of a reputation as an offensive guy, and that part of the ball has really underperformed. What's your take there, and what have you seen? Is it really just?
Yeah, I think that's been the really frustrating part is that you looked at what they did under Jeff Brohm, Bobby Petrino before him, but especially the last couple of years under Brohm, and they led the country in yards per play in 2016. You look at that stat now; they're all the way down in the 90s and the, or maybe the 100s now. Honestly, like, it's just the offense has not been potent. You know, last year, yeah. So you had Mike White, you know, it's the lead thing, the quarterback kind of hold things together, but the running game was the worst in the nation. And this year, the running game has actually started to pick up a little bit over the last month, you know, month and a half or so. But, you know, the passing game has been pretty average. I mean, you know, they've completed a decent percent of the passes and that sort of thing, but the yards per attempt have been way down. You know, they're just not generating a lot of big plays. And you look at the way the offense was under Jeff Brohm, it was, you know, all sorts. I mean, that's what's built on, those big plays. And, you know, having guys like, you know, Nicholas Norris and Taewon Taylor just, you know, wide open, making plays downfield. And that really hasn't happened much under Mike Sanford's tenure. And, you know, obviously some of that might be personnel related. Some of that might be schematically. But, you know, for whatever reason, the offense just hasn't really produced big results, you know, during his 23 games here.
Yeah, and I know he's kind of he's kind of pointed. He's said all the right things, and I mean, he seems like he is like dealing with it well. How has the team kind of responded? Do they seem like they're maybe giving up on the coach at all? Because I don't really see that.
Well, the one thing he keeps pointing to, he says that he hasn't seen any quit in his players. He's kind of gone out of his way to emphasize that he still sees fight. You know, he talked after the loss the other day. I was in Boca Raton for that. It was a 34-15 game, and it was a 10-9 game at halftime, and then they get outscored 24-6 in the second half. And he talked after the game. He says he saw unlimited fight from his players, but obviously after a while that fight kind of has to translate to the scoreboard. And I think what he's saying is that if you're fighting like this and you're losing. Some of these games have been close losses. It eventually does kind of start turning into close wins. Some of that fight, translates into, you're suddenly winning these games. But like you said, it really hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. I see a lot of parallels with Sanford and, like, Frank Wilson. Like, they both inherited some talented rosters, kind of had, some early learning curves, I guess, for like first-time head coaches, and then now as they're in mm-hmm. full rebuild mode, kind of dealing with that and also dealing with some of the expectations on them. It's kind of interesting to see, the different places that both are in. I mean, obviously Sanford has a little bit more pressure on him, and you don't quite hear the same thing for Frank Wilson. I got to say that it's probably because Western Kentucky has just more of a tradition of winning there. I mean, do you have any idea? I mean, let's say, assuming Sanford, doesn't get his wins, or maybe it's at 1-1 and weirdness happens. Are they going to force maybe some coordinator changes? Or, I mean, what is the middle ground there? It seems strange to me to say, two wins you're in, two losses you're out. I don't really know what to say in the middle.
Well, he already, so coming into this season, he changed. They hired a new strength coach. Hired a new offensive line coach, and I think the offensive line, if there's one area you can look at, say this area, he has improved. I think it's the offensive line. TJ Woods, formerly of Wisconsin and Oregon State, he's developed a lot of NFL guys, and he's done really, really good things with this line. But, one area where Mike Sanford decided to change some things was he took on a more prominent role calling plays and also coaching the quarterbacks. And obviously, the quarterback's been a little bit of a revolving door this year. They've had some guys some guys banged up, some other situations going on. But, I don't think fans have been super, thrilled with the play calling, and that was something that he took upon himself this year after Junior Adams had those duties last year. So, I wouldn't be shocked if you do see, especially some offensive staff changes over the offseason if he does stay. Because they're only scoring 18 points a game right now in a league with Conference USA, where you're facing teams that can score 30 or more points. That's not going to win you a lot of games.
Yeah, I was before the season, I was writing about, I think I was writing about UTSA, and I looked up the stat, and I think no team has won the league title that hasn't led the league in scoring since, I think, Rice beat, like, upset Marshall. And I think this season we might see a change there, just because UAB is looking pretty good. But then again, UAB scored 52 against UTSA, so you never know.
I mean, as long as you have the capability to score a lot of points, when you need. I mean, obviously there's some games that went kind of more defensive slugfest fashion, but you have to have the ability, if you do get in a shootout, to win those type of games, and that's something that Western Kentucky hasn't shown.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see, especially where they're going from there. I was a little skeptical on Charlotte and Brad Lambert there, but I mean, he kind of had the same situation where he was forced to change some coordinators. He did, and now Charlotte's in kind of in a middle ground area. So I mean, what's your feeling on this? I mean, where do you see the wind blowing? Do you think Western Kentucky can beat a rising UTEP?
Well, Vegas actually has them as a 7.5-point favorite, which I thought seemed a little bit higher than at least than what I expected. I mean, I don't see why they can't. I mean, you look at UTEP, and obviously they've played a lot better over the last month and a half or so of the season, but still, like I said, there's still a 1-9 team coming in here, and there's it's a team that I think Western Kentucky can match up well with talent-wise, and it's a team that, you know, frankly, at home on senior night with everything to play for, you should beat. Now, you know, Louisiana Tech the last weekend of the season, obviously a lot tougher. I mean, it's just a super talented roster, and, you know, veteran coach, and they've done a lot of good things this year. But, yeah, I mean, if you do go ahead and beat UTEP, it's because that's up a situation, you know, especially considering, you know, some of the odds for the coaching staff, but, you know, they could go and beat La Tech and kind of change the narrative a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of a lot of pressure for all the kids there to kind of know that they're playing for their coach's job.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, now I had another question here, and this is how I'm not the greatest podcast host here, guys. I had another question, and it kind of slipped my mind. I guess we'll just leave it there. Well, you know what? I was gonna make a joke about being sport. That's what I was gonna do. How's the Wi-Fi there at Kentucky Stadium there? I mean, last time I was on Bein Sport, everybody was giving Bein Sport a hard time because I think the Wi-Fi at Legion Field went out, and then they were doing a broadcast via phone. So hopefully that
was it there, really?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Hopefully that doesn't happen there.
Well, I wonder if Bein Sport knew what they were signing up for, and they signed up for a Western Kentucky UTEP game in late November. I mean, there have to be some other matchups in Conference USA this week. That would be better spot for your national televised, for your national TV to go. But
yeah, I agree, you know, with people, that.
People want to tune in, I guess. I guess this is something they can watch on Saturday night.
I did notice that Bein Sports stopped like publishing their ratings, like, week one like last season or something like that. Like, they haven't published it, or at least I haven't seen them. Hey, Brett,
last week Western played on Facebook, and when they play those games on Facebook, the stadium produces, you know, broadcast on Facebook, and you can see like how many people are watching the game as it's going on. I didn't have it up. I think people were telling me about 800 or 900 at certain times watching it, so I'm sure a lot of those people, especially in the second half, as it got toward that point spread, where it might have been some folks out in the desert or some other veterans who were maybe they were disappointed that the final margin was 19 instead of 20, or maybe they were happy about it. But yeah, I'm sure it kept some entertainment their way. Either way,
there are a lot of ways to enjoy a college football game, is what I'll say about that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hey, Brad, we always enjoy your work here at Conference USA Report. Appreciate you jumping on the podcast. We'll do it again. Maybe in happier times, perhaps, for Western Kentucky. Talking more about conference championships and not necessarily coaches' jobs.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks again to Brad Stevens of the Bowling Green Daily News. Good stuff. Good stuff there. Again, that's weird. Two wins. But nothing in between, right? I got to think if you beat UTEP and you lose to Louisiana Tech, that's a little bit more understandable than flipping that, right? You lose to UTEP, that's not good. Even if you win over Louisiana Tech, I think just having lost to UTEP is just bad, right? This is a team coming off an over season, only getting a win against Rice. And if they beat you, that also means that you're not as good as Rice, right? I don't know. Maybe that's how that works, right? It kind of depends on what the administration thinks the quality level is, right? Okay, let's talk to podcast favorite, Ed Miller. We're going to call him up and talk about Old Dominion and everything that went wrong and right, because both happened in Norfolk or Hampton Roads or whatever you want to call it, right? Now again to our favorite guest, Mr. Ed Miller of the Virginian Pilot. How are you doing this fine evening?
I'm doing very well, Adam. I'm always happy to be on these odd occasions when Old Dominion wins a football game. It's always newsworthy.
Yeah, they don't win just a boring old game. You know, it's always something amazing. So obviously a big comeback win. But I think the other thing to note here is that they were down 28-0, right? And I don't think a whole lot of people saw the comeback because a lot of people left. Still, a great win. Showed all the guts and talent I think we knew was there on Old Dominion. I mean, just quickly take us through the comeback.
Yes, it looked exactly as you described. 28-0, pretty much steamrolled there in the first quarter and two-thirds. Before halftime, they hit a 61-yard pass to get to set up a touchdown. So they got on the board, and then they got on the board again. They got a stop, defensive stop, which they haven't been getting all day against Mason Fine and company. And then there was the famous spinning and spin kick. It's just kind of where North Texas safety, I think it's
Kyrie Muhammad, yeah.
Allegedly, according to the officials anyway, spit and Jonathan Duhart. Duhart was very animated, really upset, and was penalized for taking his helmet off coming up the field, but otherwise, you know, they didn't really penalize him. And then Muhammad got another 15 and set up a field goal so ultimately was basically a 10-0 run heading into halftime. And to hear them tell it, you know, they were all really incensed about this incident and carry the momentum into the second half. You know, you can take that for what it's worth, I guess. Bobby Walden made a comment that it seems like this team really responds when its pride is wounded or hurt. He cited, you know, Virginia Tech, where nobody gave him a chance. And then, of course, West Virginia Kentucky. I don't know where their pride was right there, but that was just a crazy comeback. So it's a talented team that seems to need some, you know, motivation to pull off these kind of wins. You know, it's a team that are 3-7. I think they're going to win Saturday. They play VMI, which is a FCS team that hasn't won a game against a Division I opponent in a couple of years. Their only win this year was over a Division II team. They're kind of just a Wobegon program. And then they play at Rice, so, you know, that game will come down to who cares the most, I guess, between Rice and Old Dominion heading into the final week. So they could finish 5-7. You know, which would be ironically identical to what they did last year, but they went about it in a much different way.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting way to put it. Like they need that kind of pride hurting kind of moment there. I think I read this week. You know, everybody's kind of speculating like who's on the hot seat, that kind of thing. And I saw Bobby Wilder's name come up again. And I know we've talked about it on this show. We also mentioned I said, hey, Old Dominion kind of has the offense to give North Texas some trouble. So you heard it here first, folks, on the Conference USA podcast.
I know you're in North Texas. You know, you know them pretty well. And I thought they could move the ball, too. I just questioned whether they would be able to stop North Texas. And, you know, they actually, second half, they got some stops.
Yeah, they did.
They got more pressure on Fine. And, you know, the defense has been much maligned for good reason, really. I mean, they're one of the worst statistical defenses in the country, you know, they kind of, you know, they rose up a little bit and did what they needed to do, and you know, so good win for them. I mean, not that many people were still around to see it. It was a very cold night here in Virginia, and you know, a 2-7 team is not a big draw, even Old Dominion, which is like really good fan support. So at halftime, a lot of people thought, I got something better to do. I'm going to call it a night. And those who stuck around, you know, got to see a crazy finish. But,
I think what's interesting is even the broadcast kind of cut out for a little bit. It's news. Yeah. Even the broadcast kind of cut out for a little bit. Like the feed dropped.
I heard that. Yeah. I got some complaints on Twitter to that effect. Yeah. We can't. It's funny. It's coming from some Old Dominion fans who I know who are pretty critical of the team, home team, and they're kind of like, I can't see this team that I hate. You know what I'm saying? I have nothing to yell at. You know, it's kind of like, and just like any other fans, they're some passionate fans, and they tend to be, I think, the most vocal. You know, the ones that are maybe critical tend to get the squeaky wheels, get the most attention.
Yeah, and you know, I think the league overall, you know, they don't have the best TV deal, and I know you kind of wrote a lot of the initial kind of breaking news on some of the TV deals. It's not the greatest TV deal, but I think the conference did as good as they could given the circumstances, and that's, you know, like why I don't like it. You know, like I'm not excited about finding ESPN Plus or Be In Sport. I want to watch some of these games, But at least they're available, relatively speaking, and it is a step up from Conference USA TV. I got to say.
I agree. I mean, it's a niche world that we're entering. You know, where people can get the content they want in their particular field of interest. And you know, Conference USA is certainly, if you're a Conference USA supporter or a fan, you can generally find the game somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, or we get people from time to time that will call our office saying, what channel is that? You know, I remember when ESPN, and I had to kind of explain it. You know, you're not going to find it on your, it's not going to be in your
TV cable box, package. Yeah, yeah.
You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to stream it. But people are adapting. I mean, I was on the ESPN Plus the other night watching the OU St. Joe's basketball game. So they're playing a Paradise Jam basketball, and that's on something called Flow TV.
Yeah.
Which, I think unfortunately you have to pay $30. It's not one of those where you can get the, you know, the old week long trial and then watch your one game and then cancel. I think they want $30 period to watch it. So I don't know if I'll be doing that. I may be listening to the radio. We'll see.
I think it's all great, but one thing I for me, like, you can't flip between games. You know, I'd like to kind of flip between three or four games. But it's hard to, like, switch the stream over to something else. It's not, well, it's not
That's
quick.
A great point. I hadn't thought of that. Cause usually when I'm watching one of those games, it's kind of work-related. I mean, it's, you know, whether, like, for instance, Old Dominion basketball is playing in Philadelphia Friday night. And, of course, Old Dominion football is playing in Norfolk on Saturday early afternoon. So it would have been technically possible to get to both, but it would have been a little bit of a, you know, logistical hassle. And I've done things like that in the past, but basically this time we said, no, we'll just go to the football game. So I was watching the basketball game, just kind of dedicated to watching that. But yeah, if I didn't want to switch, it is an issue. You're right. Not like the old days of flipping the channels.
Yeah, it's a little more difficult for, like, you know, this site, right, Conference USA Report, where I'm interested in all the games, which makes it hard to watch all the games. You know, I'm kind of fighting my streaming.
That's a great point. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, you're trying to keep track of. Typically, I've got one, you know, to watch, and you're trying to watch up to seven in a week. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's not always easy.
Keeps you busy.
Yeah, it does. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Bobby Wilder, because I think if his – I mean, we talked about whether or not he's on the hot seat, and I think we kind of decided it's probably not. If he were, right, if somebody was thinking about it in the administration, like maybe it's time for a change. Does this kind of win, you know, help him out a lot, or is it just kind of like, well, he kind of got?
Yeah, I think it helps. I mean, you know, they get to five wins. I mean, that's, you know, again, that's not a great. That's the second straight losing season. But had they lost Saturday, and I was all prepared to write this, it would have, you know, they would have clinched their worst season ever. I mean, they've never lost fewer than five games since they've been a football program for 10 years now. So the best they could have done would have been 4-8. So that would have been, you know, the worst season in school, the brief history. But, yeah, I mean, I think Bob, one thing that's helping Bobby in that regard is the buyout is over $1 million. I think about $1.2 million. And, you know, at some schools that's pocket change, you know. At Old Dominion, that's kind of real money, you know.
Yeah.
They don't have the kind of people that are going to call and say, hey, could you stroke me a check because we want to get rid of this guy. And then you got to pay, you know, a new coach. And, you know, so I think he'll be okay for this year. I mean, I think there could be some changes on staff. I think that, you know, most of these assistant coaches are at-will employees, which means basically they're year-to-year.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't shock me if there were some changes, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, where I think they need to, you know, at least have the appearance of doing something different. And maybe there's time, you know, maybe there's time for a change there. They haven't really had much success defensively at all. And, you know, the thing is, they probably won't be any better next year. It's hard to project them being better given what they're going to lose with the number of seniors they have and, you know, just some of the depth issues that they've had are going to be exacerbated because they're losing a lot of experienced players. And they're going heavy on JUCO recruiting right now, which, you know, is always a little bit of a crapshoot, I think. I'm not sure that's ever a long-term solution to anything, but you know, they feel like they need a lot of need help. So that kind of tells you the state of the roster right now. You know, they have some good young players, you know, freshmen that have played pretty well. Their recruiting classes haven't been really highly regarded, you know, in the league. And I think that's kind of played out. Now that's since in the last 2 or 3 years. So, yeah, Bobby, you know, I think he'll be around at least until next year. And, you know, we'll see what happens after that, depending on how, you know, how things go.
Yeah, you brought up some good points that I was just going to ask you about. I mean, you've mentioned before in your previous appearances and those previous newsworthy wins that this roster was kind of built to win, you know, these last couple years, and they haven't, right? They kind of topped out at 5 wins, as you said. So, I mean, I don't really see either too many wins coming next year, because next year is kind of a reloading year if you were really good, and maybe a rebuilding year if you weren't so good. And, you know, I can't imagine a whole lot of people are going to want to fight through that kind of, you know. You mentioned the fans. This is 2 seasons already with losing football, even if it was relatively entertaining in some spots. It's an interesting position to be in. I mean,
what they've got going for them, what they've got going for them next year is the new, although it's the same footprint, basically a new stadium. You know, they've got their stadium is easily, you know, it's one of the worst in the league. I mean, I haven't been to all of them, but it's old and showing its age, and you know, it doesn't really have much in the way of amenities, fan amenities. And the last home game at this stadium will be Saturday. By Tuesday, I think there'll be, you know, the wrecking ball will be swinging. They'll knock the east and west clamshell, you know, stands down, and they'll just put up a whole new structure. Basically, they're gonna save some of it, but it's a $65 million project, and you know, so they'll have that going for them next year, you know, the novelty of, you know, coming to the new stadium, and I think that'll keep fans interested for a while, because you know, the current stadium, it, you know, is wearing pretty thin. I mean, it's one of these places where there's porta potties, and the concessions aren't very good, you know, and the press box is just, and I don't want to sound like a, you know, entitled member of the media, but it's pretty bad. it's as Brett Vito from the Denton paper said, you know, hey, there's high school stadiums, a lot of high school stadiums in Texas that are better facilities than this, and I think there's a few around here in Virginia too.
Yeah,
it's really really primitive. The press box is not too good. Just look it that way.
Yeah, I've heard some of those stories before. I haven't been there myself, so
you're not missing much. I mean, I'll put it this way: in the fourth quarter of the other day, and you know, right when things were getting interesting, it was kind of a little bit rainy, and there was so much condensation on the inside of the. I had to run into the one bathroom they have, which, believe me, is Spartan, and grab some paper towels and wipe down the so I could see. I mean, it was, you know, not tough working conditions, but not ideal. So, the stadium, they'll have a new stadium this year. I think that'll give them a little something to market, you know, even if the team is not going to be great.
Well, I mean, I think that they'll have to do something. It's pretty interesting. Like I said, I think you got to be excited about a win if you're like an Old Dominion fan, right? That was, is obviously the... Mm-hmm. Great if you're watching it, but I mean, a comeback always means a good number of fans are not there to see it, and I think you know you'd like your stands filled and everybody cheering as you're making a comeback or winning the game. So I don't know.
Well, Wilder, to his credit, you know, said, "Hey, I'm not blaming people for not coming." And you know, I think they announced the crowd like 18,000, which, you know, it only holds 20,118, I think, is capacity. Yeah. So there may not have been quite that many people there, 18, but you know, it wasn't deserted.
Right.
But while they're busy, said, "Yeah, I'm not blaming them for not coming. You know, we're 2-7, so you know that's not on us." So you know, he knows the deal. But you know, they have a little momentum now. I mean, such as it is.
Right.
So you know, if they get the 5 wins, the big thing with this team is like what could have been. That Charlotte game was really kind of haunts them, you know. one they really wanted to play at the time, because I think they thought, hey, we need 6 wins, and here's one. And they sort of forced that. They played on a Thursday because it was the hurricane was bearing down, and they moved that up 2 days. They traveled one of those days to get to Charlotte, and basically I think had 1 day to prepare, or you know, 1 day in Norfolk and then 1 day in Charlotte, and then lost the close game. And then down in East Carolina was another game that got away from them late with some, you know, there was some controversial calls. But, you know, they get either one of those, and all of a sudden you're looking at six wins, and, you know, everything's different. And, you know, even with the, I think there's more teams than there are Bulls this year. So it wouldn't be a guarantee they'd go somewhere. But it would certainly change, you know. You know how it is in college football. The Bowl, you know, makes everything...
Yeah,
you know,
gives it a nice little sheen. Yeah.
Especially for a program like this, still getting off the ground.
I think the danger in playing that what if game is that, you know, you do it one way, it has to go the other way, right? Let's say they win those, but do they beat Virginia Tech? Do they come back and beat Western Kentucky? You know, a game that they all but lost. And do they beat North Texas in that same situation? I don't know.
Exactly, yeah. When you have three crazy wins, you can't assume, oh, we're going to win these three crazy games.
Yeah.
And then if we'd only won these other two as well,
yeah,
everything would be different. So, yeah, that's the and, of course, the Liberty game at the beginning of the season was a complete mystery as to why they played so poorly in that one. So, you're exactly right. You can't always play that. It does go both ways, yeah.
Yeah, and I also think like Liberty's weird. They've had another they've had a weird season where they'll lose, and then they just blow somebody out, or just completely obliterate them. So I never know what to think about Liberty either. So
They just played at Virginia. We was having a pretty good year, and they gave Virginia, you know, it was a game for a half or so. Virginia made some adjustments and kind of pulled away, but yeah, I mean they're a decent, you know, they're.
They beat
Troy. Four programs in the state, you know, they're at the FBS level, the fourth, kind of the fourth. And, you know, there's a chance, you know, Old Dominion's got to kind of, you know, look in the rearview mirror there. Because, you know, they have facilities, they have a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going to be heard from, you know, in the upcoming coming years.
Yeah, it's an interesting time in Old Dominion football. It seems so long ago. But it wasn't that they were 10 win team going to a bowl game. Everything looked great and, trending upward.
Yeah, 2 years ago. And some of the players that are seniors, you know, were sophomores in the team, you know, probably played a good bit. They said, you know, this team is more talented. Like, we've got more talent. And even Wilder said, yeah, they're right.
Yeah.
So Wilder, he basically just chalked everything up to third downs, which they haven't been very good at. Red zone, which they haven't been very good at either, and turnovers, which they were last in the league heading into last week's game. So turnovers, you know, third down, you know, they couldn't get off the field on defense, and they haven't converted that many offense. And then, you know, red zone, where they haven't been good at stopping teams, and they haven't capitalized. So, you know, that's kind of the cold analytical football way of looking at it. And,
yeah.
Why that is, you know, you can speculate, but they just haven't put it together. But they don't quit. I think, you know, it seems like they don't, you know, they keep playing, at least in games that are within reach, the Western Kentucky game and the North Texas game. So, you know, they're still playing hard, I think. I don't think he's lost the locker room or anything like that.
Yeah, I think, like I said, it's an interesting situation. They're a good team. I always thought they were going to be dangerous this year. I figured they were going to play spoiler just because they have two talented wide receivers. You can just kind of toss the ball up there. Some people were asking, like, how did North Texas lose that game? I was like, well, you know, it comes down to it. I think it was, like, late in the game. North Texas had a third down, didn't convert. It was, like, a fourth and one, right? And running back doesn't convert. And you flip it, Old Dominion had a fourth and three. And I think was it Lala Davis had a second effort. It looked like he was wrapped up on fourth and three. Gets the first down, and four plays later, right?
And they had a fourth and whatever. I think six on that last drive, and
throw it up to Jonathan Duhart. He makes a play.
Yeah,
I mean sometimes football.
Fulgham's been great. Fulgham's been like a different person. He always had that kind of potential, but last seven games, he's been like, you know, he's getting the attention that Duhart was getting. I mean, he's played incredibly well. He had five catches, I think, in the first three games, and now since then, he's got about in the 40s. And he's passed Duhart, I think, in yardage. I'll have to look at it in front of me, but he's got a touchdown in seven straight games. So, yeah, the way they explained it, they said they went big in the second half. They just decided, you know, that if North Texas is going to load them up, load up in the box to stop the run, they're going to throw those guys on the edges. And, you know, vice versa, they were going to try to run it if they decided to cover. So, you know, with more guys back. So, you know, they made an adjustment here or there. And I know Seth Luttrell, I saw some of the quotes he talking about they weren't able to finish. And, you know, there's always two sides to every game.
There was two sides to that spit thing, right? Kyrie Muhammad tweeted, he said, I would never spit on somebody. Well, he said, I will never spit on a player. But I think...
Yeah, he said, it was interesting the way he worded in his tweet, I will never spit on another player. Or like, it kind of, you know, it was not the best worded tweet, I didn't think. I haven't found it. I know, he basically said, and he also said there was no replay. You know, and, you know, that was almost what officials said and with whatever you, because they announced it on the field, you know, ejected for spinning, and, you know, whether he did or not, I don't know. The important thing for all the media is they believe that he did.
Exactly.
And Duhart was really, really upset. And having, you know, covered him for a couple of years, a super quiet kid, nice, soft-spoken guy, and a team captain, and I think everyone was just kind of shocked. And I was looking like, what's going on with Duhart? And he's the last guy you think would be...
Yeah.
Acting like that. So something happened. I don't know. But, you know, he's in the moment. So these are young guys. So
yeah,
hopefully everybody can kind of learn something from it, yeah. I guess. <yeah.
laughs> Well, I mean, it reminds me a little bit of that the basketball thing, really. Rajon Rondo spit in Chris Paul's face. And I think, you know, Rajon Rondo said it was an accident. It was just kind of he was saying something and, you know, spit came out of his mouth, but it wasn't intentional. He didn't, like, spit on him. So I'm guessing, I mean, like I said, just from what I know of Kyrie Muhammad, he's not really that kind of guy. He doesn't really get into the
stuff that
way. Too.
Yeah.
So I figure that, you know, something happened. It probably was a little unintentional. And, I think if we saw a replay, we'd probably know a little bit more. But I don't doubt that something happened.
It was a pretty chippy game, I mean, in general.
Yeah.
There was a lot of after the whistle kind of, you know, back and forth. So,
well, these two teams played
a beginning of some kind of rivalry. I don't know. I can't even tell you if they played, you know, again next year. I don't know. I know they played the last two, so I guess they wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't think
because you rotate teams from the other division. So I don't even know if they're on the schedule next year. But
yeah, I think maybe the way that last year ended kind of made everybody a little chippy. I know I asked Isaiah Harper kind of about that, and he was like, "Yeah, you know, that's the one we're looking at. We felt like we should have won that game." I asked him at media days, and you know, so I wonder maybe some of that carried over. It was a close game last season, and I think like North Texas stopped Old Dominion like three times on fourth and one, or it was something like that.
Yeah, those Harper kick returns were kind of the story from Old Dominion, but they weren't able to convert. Yeah, I mean honestly, I picked North Texas, I mean, we pick the games every week, and I think my record is just really abysmal. Because, you know, I try to, you know, not only be a homer, but I try to kind of give them the benefit of the doubt. And I think I picked North Texas. I think I had the actual point total right, because it was 65. So I think I picked North Texas like 38-27, which I thought was being a little generous at the time.
Yeah.
But I think they were 14-point favorites. So, you know, I got the 65 part right. I didn't get them in the right place. So,
yeah, I think I picked something like North Texas 41 and then Old Dominion 21, right, in my, like, preview. And, you know, I think somebody tweeted me during the game. They're like, do you think Old Dominion's going to score 21? I was like, well, they have an offense. At the time, it was like 28-0. So I was like, well, maybe when I wrote it, I did. I don't know. But that's it. Old Dominion had an offense.
Well, Wilder said, was like in the first half, he's like, I didn't think we were going to score. He's like, we couldn't do anything. Like, he credited, you know, this kind of football geeky talk, but he credited North Texas with, like, disguising their coverages, like, better than anybody. Because he said that, you know, La Russa would do a lot of run-pass options, and he's supposed to read certain players, you know, to figure out whether to keep it or whether to, you know, whatever to do. and they were disguising things really well. They were looking for stuff for LaRusso, you know, to run that would work.
Yeah.
And so they kind of threw out the original game plan. But he was really, he was, you know, and coaches generally, you know, saying nice things about the other team.
Yeah.
But I think he was sincerely, you know, impressed with their defensive the scheme, you know, the way they disguise their coverages and things. So,
well, they figured that out in the second half.
Defensively had been pretty good, I think, just coming in.
At least for a quarter and a half. North Texas is a weird, they're a weird team right now. I mean, all three losses they've had have been had the same MO. They were up 21-6 against Louisiana Tech and lose.
Mm-hmm.
They were up 21-10 against UAB and they lose. 28-0 against Old Dominion and you lose. So some questions being asked. I think some North Texas fans are like, "Well, somebody got to get fired." It's like I don't know about all that, but yeah, I mean. I think interesting times in Conference USA football. I don't know if it's I don't know if this is the best conference in the nation, but it certainly is interesting week to week.
Yeah, it's never dull. I'll put it that way. I mean, there's more 14 teams. There's always something going on. You know, some kind of storyline. You know, UAB obviously being the top of the pile right now. But you know, it's been on a given week, you know, you kind of never know what's going to happen. And Old Dominion is kind of the poster child for that, I guess.
So I know you've seen a lot more of the East teams, just, you know, covering Old Dominion, mm-hmm. being in the East.
Right.
Who's going to win that? Who's going to come out? I know FIU right now has, I think, the inside track, right? They just need to win out and beat Marshall, and then they'll be in. But there's a path for Middle Tennessee. Who's the better team out of Florida International and Middle Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, Old Dominion, they basically got lost to both of them. I mean, they played FIU a little tougher early in the year. And Middle, they just kind of, you know, disintegrated and lost. Was it 51-17, I think it was.
Yeah.
I mean, FIU just strikes me as really solid, you know. Just, you know, they're not particularly flashy. And, you know, maybe I'd give them a slight edge. You know, I know the Stockstill thing is kind of intriguing, but... with Middle, and you know, he's kind of this X factor playmaker, but you know, I haven't kept up with FIU as much since they played Old Dominion, but maybe I'd give them, as you say, they've got kind of a clear path that they control their destiny, I guess, right? To use the cliche,
yeah. And sometimes it puts
them at FAU, you know, Florida Atlantic. I mean, you know, they're capable, but you know, clearly they're out of the running, but.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. The
quarterback
to
situation,
have.
You know, with
with the
guy, they missed the guy last year, and more than they thought they would. Just with the Driscoll thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
I'm trying to remember his name.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's kind of odd because FIU might be the East champion, and they just got spanked by Florida Atlantic. So that's kind of weird, and it doesn't give me good feelings if I'm a Florida International fan to take on a UAB team that's beaten North Texas that looked otherwise you know, pretty formidable and pretty much humbled Louisiana Tech in Ruston. So, you know,
yeah. We'll see. I don't know. How does Middle finish out? What are the remaining games?
They play UAB. So you know.
Oh, okay. Well, that's probably, you know. Is that in Birmingham or is that in Murfreesboro? I don't know.
That's in Murfreesboro. So, you know, a little lucky that, you know, Middle Tennessee plays at Kentucky, right? So that's kind of a... They play at Kentucky, so, you know, yeah. I don't know what that does. It's so late in the season. It's kind of weird to play an SEC team at the time. And then you play a big game against UAB that all but decides your fate if you're Middle Tennessee, right? I think there's a scenario in which Middle wins... against UAB and like say UAB, well obviously they would lose, and then Middle Tennessee would get the home date, and the conference championship game would be December 1st against UAB in Murfreesboro again. Get a little rematch. So,
oh yeah,
yeah. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, Middle. I mean, they do play a schedule every year.
Yeah,
what, three SEC teams? Is that right this year?
I think you're right. Yeah. They played Vandy. Yeah. Georgia and, you know, Kentucky.
Yeah, so, I mean, you got to tip your hat to them there. I mean, you know, they do play. They play a brutal non-conference schedule. I mean, that's, you know, and then, I guess they need the money. I don't, you know, they're all, well, not, you know, they're not, I know Vandy has come there before.
Yeah.
So maybe that's not a pure guarantee game, but I'm sure there's, you know, seven figures game guarantees maybe from the other two, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, I think, yeah.
That buys a lot of athletic tape.
Yes, it does. Well, all right, Ed, we always appreciate you coming on here. And I think, I mean, you have like a little fan base, you know? Everybody's like, all right, Old Dominion wins. That means you get more Ed Miller on the show.
They got that going for us. Yeah, it's been an interesting season. It's not the way I thought it would go, obviously. But, you know, I think they'll finish on an uptick. And, you know, I am going to Houston for that Rice game, so that'll be, you know, which team cares, doesn't care less, I guess, maybe. I'm trying to phrase it. But, you know, which team is not checked out mentally? Because, you know, I don't know what anybody's got to play for. It'll be senior day, I guess, in Houston, right? And, you know, the Dominion will be playing for fifth win and all that good stuff. So,
well, I think if you want to see...
game of the week. Not.
Yeah. I think
like
you
the Western Kentucky game. You know, it was a couple of one-win team, and it turned out to be crazy. So.
Yeah, I think if you want to see a stadium that maybe, you know, needs some work, it's Rice Stadium. It's, you know, there was a Super Bowl there, and John F. Kennedy gave a speech there, and it doesn't look like, you know, anybody would give a speech there now. I think it's nice.
It reminded me of the Orange Bowl in the waning days. I covered one of the last games at the Orange Bowl. I think it was the last game Miami ever played at the Orange Bowl.
Yeah.
And Virginia just happened to be on that day and absolutely annihilated Miami with all these, like, hurricane breaks standing on the sideline. But in the waning days, yeah, the Orange Bowl was just a little tired. You know, it still had that kind of teal color scheme everywhere. And,
yeah.
You know, you expected to see, like, you know, Larry Zonka and Leslie Morris, like, walking there. It just looked like it hadn't changed at all since the 70s. So yeah, Rice Stadium, I guess it's a piece of Americana, right? So,
yeah. We'll, I mean, it was cool being there, but you could see that it was not as great as, you know, the average stadium that you encounter.
Probably better than they need. I mean, I would think, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, yeah.
By a lot. It's a drafty old house. They need to downsize. You know, the kids have moved out. Time to downsize. So, anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah.
Anyway, I appreciate you having me on, Adam. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk again.
You never know with the Old Dominion, right?
Right. Just keep me on speed dial, and I'll be here if you need me.
Thanks again for joining Conference USA Report. We appreciate it. We'll read you every week or every day, however often you post. You post a lot. So.
All right, I appreciate it. Have a good week.
You too. All right, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening to the Conference USA Report podcast. Hopefully the sound quality was okay for you, right? If you have any trouble, let me know. Right, email me at podcast@conferenceusareport.com. That's CUSAreport.com. And, you know, we'll talk about it, right? I'll email it. We can go over things. Leave a review on iTunes. You know, leave a 5-star review. If you want to leave anything less, email me first and we can talk about it. Let me know what your troubles are. If you want to get in touch with the show, that's the best way to do it. You can tweet at Conference USA Report. It's at CUSAreport.com or at CUSA Report. That's on Twitter. See you next week, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm going to try to make it out to the conference championship game, but, you know, I have to know where it is first. All right, ladies and gentlemen, see you guys next week.